Welcome to Keeping Up With Data. Keeping Up With Data is the podcast that keeps data enthusiasts up to speed with what is happening in the data world. We bring in the leading minds from the data industry to talk all things career, news, embarrassing stories, failures and successes.
Welcome to Keeping Up With Data. I'm Emily Noter.
I'm playing by Mira.
And today we have a very special guest, Adam Grubach, who is currently at Great Southern Bec, but I won't even start introducing you. I'll start with you introducing yourself.
Sure. So I'm Adam Grubach. Like you said, I work at Great Southern Bank at the moment. My current title is long and ridiculous. I'm currently the Senior Manager of Data Science and Data Modeling in the team, but basically have just been a data and analytics professional for, I think it's over 10 years now, which is quite strange. It's a long career. I'm sure we'll get into it.
Yeah, awesome. And tell us more about, I suppose, how you got to where you are in GSB and your journey, I suppose.
Yeah, so before this, I was at AMP, where I was for, I think, 5 years or something like that, where I was started out quite junior and sort of worked up to, you know, a senior analyst and then carved out a role to be more specialized in data science there. I think it was the lead data scientist when I left. But that's where I met my current boss, who eventually moved over to Great Southern Bank. And when they started to do a project where they were doing a mass migration from their on-premises systems to cloud, he sort of said, oh, I think I could use an Adam for this. So he approached me and I thought it would be a good opportunity. So I came across.
I feel like that's what we get as recruiters as well, is when we place someone like, let's just say it's you, they're always like, cool, I need another Adam, clone an Adam, please.
I feel like, human cloning would solve a lot of problems in the data industry.
Yeah, I agree. How do you actually frame that up? It's probably a little bit of a tangent, but like, let's just say you're hiring for your team at GSB and you're like, I remember this person was really great, like, find me another person exactly the same. Like, does that hinder you a lot, or does it kind of like, I don't know, add a lot of value?
Yeah, it is a bit hard. I mean, when you've worked with, I've been very lucky to work with a lot of really good individuals. So at least you know what good looks like. It's always hard to find the exact like carbon copy of a single person, but I mean, at least you can sort of take the qualities away. And I mean, there's so many intangibles in this. Like, you need someone who's not only technical, but they have to be good with people, and trying to find that combination is so hard. So when you do find it, it's rare. So then you try and hold onto it. So trying to find it again is, you know, trying to catch a lightning in a bottle, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to be quite realistic with how you go about recruiting and not necessarily fit a mold and actually understand how it kind of like adds value to different people's sort of skill sets already in the team and things like that. So
yeah, exactly.
I get that. And so what about, like, I suppose, taking it back a notch, like your history with data science yourself and obviously being quite applied from your sort of academic background. Talk us through what that's looked like for you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, my academic background, I have a double degree in mathematics and electrical engineering, which I use the mathematics a little bit now, but the engineering is kind of, I guess, a nice to have. I can fix stuff around the office. But it does teach you good things like problem solving and programming, things like that, which you get to keep going through. And I think that was what I liked. I like problem solving and, you know, getting to apply, just getting thrown at a problem and trying to solve it, which I think data science has a lot of those aspects to it. Like, there's a, you know, it's a very wide ranging problem. You can do a lot of things to do it and do it right. So I think that's what drew me to it. I didn't really understand it was a career path until I got to my first graduate role at IBM. And we were sort of working on a client site, and I was talking to other people who were in sort of the data stream in that company, and they were saying, oh, have you ever thought about, I think it was the, they called it like statistical modeling and advanced analytics was the part at IBM. They're like, oh, have you thought about doing this? Because then you had a maths background. And I was like, oh, I've done statistical modeling. I didn't realize you could sort of do it as a career, because this was, you know, over 10 years ago now, when, you know, machine learning and all that stuff wasn't really a big thing. So I think I looked into that. They were using their own products like IBM SPSS. So I learned that and sort of learned how to apply it to business problems. And I thought, oh, no, this is actually what I want to be doing. So that sort of set me down the path for data science. And I've just sort of been growing in that space ever since.
Yeah, that's interesting. I heard when I started in recruitment probably 7 years or so ago in the data space, it was always very much like, oh, what's IBM doing? Like, IBM's like amazing. And like, they obviously, the statistical modeler or statistician was the more like, I suppose, buzzwordy term. But now it's like data scientist or something to do with ML,
etc. Yeah, exactly.
Et cetera, yeah. what, I suppose, from your perspective in your career has been like the most pivotal moment for you to get you to where you are today?
Ooh, great question.
I know that's a bit of a curveball question, but, yeah. You know.
No, it's a great question. I think it's probably when I was at AMP and I was sort of trying to carve out that. I mean, what I sort of saw was there wasn't a lot of usage of data science there. I think we were an analytics team. We were answering the company's questions just using the data we had. But there wasn't a lot of use of, you know, modeling to try and predict things were going to happen in the future. I think they had tried to outsource a few things, or, you know, they were doing some things in a really simple sort of Excel thrown into their linear regression kind of thing. But it wasn't really being applied there. And there was a lot of sort of space there to explore. Mm-hmm. So when I tried to do that and I carved out that role, there was a few projects in. We had a really good, I think it was a insurance attrition model. So we had insurance contracts. We wanted to know who was going to leave in the next 3 months. And it was a really good exercise in showing like what building a model for an actual business looks like. And it was, you know, it's not just getting the model as accurate as possible. It's not using the most advanced techniques. It's taking the stakeholders on a journey and getting them to accept that, you know, they have to trust this, you know, potentially black box thing and trying to explain it to them and getting people who aren't technical on board. And that's like the whole journey. And then, you know, keeping it up to date and refreshing it. And like, what does that actually look like in an actual business? So I think from that point onwards, I had a much better appreciation for what does this job actually look like in a business? Because I think, you know, when I've seen a lot of junior people now, they sort of come in and say, oh, you know, I've done the most up-to-date sort of neural net models and I understand exactly how Transformers and GPT works under the hood. I'm like, that's great, but no one in the business is going to take that on. So we really have to strip it back to basics and talk about how do you communicate these models. So, but yeah, I think that's that was sort of the moment I realized what this actually takes.
Okay, that's quite interesting, Adam. I think that sort of leads nicely into our next point, just with regards to tips for graduate level analysts or people trying to get into that space. What are, I guess, three things that you would suggest or recommend for someone starting out into a new role?
Yeah, sure. I think especially learning how to access and manipulate data is more important than knowing how to build the models. There's a lot of people that I sort of see CVs coming through where they're, you know, their skills are, you know, TensorFlow and all these ML libraries and stuff, but they don't have things like SQL. So they couldn't, if all of that data sits in a database, like how are they going to get the data to actually put into their model? So I think it's just those basics of like being able to get data from a lot of sources and manipulate it first. The modeling part can almost take care of itself. And I'm sure a lot of those people would already know that. So that's the first one.
Yeah.
I think the next one is probably knowing how to get the business problem that you're trying to solve. A lot of the time, like people will come to you with an idea for a model. So I need to predict this. And it's like, okay, well, why are you doing that? What's the actual business problem you're trying to solve? What's the application of the model? Because I think that actually helps you answer a lot of questions about how you build the model out. One of the, like the insurance model I was talking about, one of the things that we found was a really big predictor of that churn was actually what financial advisor you were with, because of historical schemes around commission, they actually were incentivized to drop their clients after a year and put them on a new contract because you've actually got a bigger upfront commission than you did trail commission. But without knowing how the insurance side of the business works, you wouldn't have even known to try and put those sort of advisor level metrics in there. So it's really understanding the business problem of the space you're trying to solve rather than just, you know, what is the model you're trying to build. And I guess if I had a third one, it's actually looking at the data before you throw it into a model. I think it's very tempting to just gather as much data as you can and just like throw it into a model and just let it, you know, do its thing and, you know, drop all the nulls and just use every column you can to try and infer something. But I think actually looking at that data first and understanding like, okay, is that a reasonable assumption to make? Can I actually let go of some of this data? Could I fill it in? Do I need all of these things or is it just going to cloud the model? I think that's a step that I think a lot of people sort of miss. They just kind of go for that, get the data, put it in a model, go. They don't do the actual exploratory data analysis step. So I think that's something that people need to do a lot more.
Yeah,
I agree. I feel like someone said to me earlier, actually, like, big data is not necessarily like going to give you what you need. Like you think to go big is going to be like, oh, I'm going to have more to play with and it'll give me better results. But actually, it's not necessarily the case. I feel like you're quite a good but a good example of someone who knows how to do really good foundational basics and setting up an environment properly, which is what you, I think, are doing at GSB right now. So maybe you can tell us, I suppose, how you're helping GSB get that sort of environment ready to be able to actually do the data science work, but effectively, rather than just saying, oh, I'm a data scientist, I do this and I build models, and not actually having the so what behind it.
Yeah, sure. Because I mean, right now we're not doing any data science at the moment. Like we're so focused on just migrating all of our data from our on-premises system to the cloud and getting that right first. Because if we don't, then we any data science we do on top of it will not be any good. So right now it's about making sure that, you know, we have this bronze, silver, gold approach to our data, where bronze is raw, we get it from source, we don't do anything to it. Silver, we use a data vault modeling methodology to make sure that our data is well modeled in that layer. And then we have a gold consumption layer for our business and for our modeling teams to be able to use, that's curated. It takes into account all of our business definitions that, you know, we're getting signed off by the business. So things like, is a customer active? We have one sort of definition for that that's signed off, so that if we build a model and we say, oh, the customer is active, is a very high correlation with whatever we're trying to predict, everyone in the business knows that that's the same sort of metric. Whereas I think that's kind of the problem across a lot of the businesses, where so many people have the same metric, but it has 10 different definitions. So even if you try to sell this to other people in the business, they might be, you know, you could explain it to them, but they might be thinking of something completely different. So I think at the moment it's just making sure that we've got the data right, and then we'll get on to the data science stuff. And I can already see so much low hanging fruit that I'm just like itching to get at it, but kind of have to pull myself back and just say, you know, we have to get the data right first. We're nearly there, but it's just making sure we get there.
Yeah, I feel like that would be hard as well, especially if you've got like a team that is so excited as well to get into that part. You kind of like have to be really good at telling a story and educating why it is you're doing what you're doing first. Like, how do you sort of navigate those conversations with teams that you might have to sort of like almost not keep on a leash, but like pull them back and say, hey, no, we're not ready yet?
Yeah, I mean, I find that all the time. A lot of my guys have been doing, you know, the same kind of data modeling and data cleaning and exploration stuff for a long time. And I feel bad for them, because I think they want to do more exciting things, to be honest. But I think I try and explain to them like the benefit of doing this in the long run and how much easier this is going to make our lives. But even like in terms of actually exploring the business value of a problem, I think even in the simplest case, like we had like in the analytics team, I think we had a very bad habit a long time ago of just taking orders and like doing whatever the customer had asked us for, like build me this report with 10 columns. And it's like, if you ask a simple question of why, you know, maybe the answer isn't a report, and maybe they're doing 10 other steps after that. And maybe the answer is then a model, and we can actually do something fun with it. So it's just asking those extra questions, and it actually has so much benefit to what you do, and you understand it better, they get a better result. So I'm just trying to instill that in people. It's just like, if you ask the extra question, it will give you value. You may not see it straight away, but it actually does help. And I think we have seen it. It's just, yeah, you have to get people used to saying no, or at least pushing back a little bit and just asking that extra question.
Yeah, I agree. But like the framing out the business problem is probably the hardest part, like to be able to understand, okay, is it actually this problem that you guys are telling us, or is it that it's just this one and we're not ready to do that part yet? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, even like I'd say it again, like the insurance model that we ended up building ages ago, they came to us and said, you know, we have an attrition problem. And we actually looked into it, and we looked at it at their books, and, you know, the attrition rate was something like 2% annually. And we were like, oh, do you actually have an attrition problem, or are you just trying to stitch up that last 2%? And they're like, no, that's what we're trying to do. And it's, you know, one part of the business problem, you know, they might have a 2% attrition rate and think that's the worst thing. And another part might have a 10%. And they're like, no, that's just natural churn. We don't worry about it. So it's really like business unit to business unit specific about what their actual needs and business problems are.
Yeah, that is an art as well, to being able to ask the right questions. I feel like that comes up a lot in interviews as well, like people having to ask, or knowing when to ask the right questions and stuff like that. It's pretty hard to figure out what that would be, to be able to draw out info and insights.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part about interviewing, is like, how do you find those intangibles in a person? Like, it's very easy to give someone a technical skill kind of test and show that they know Python or something like that, but it's very hard to sit down with someone and know, are they going to ask the business questions at the right time? Are they going to ask the right people? Do they have that drive to just go a little deeper? Like, that's the hardest thing to find out.
It's like when you're describing, I think earlier about IBM and like the why behind where you are, like the key thing I took from that as well, which kind of leads into this point, is like you are such a connector to like so many different business units, people. Like if people are understanding of, I suppose, what you do and what value you can add, is like the most pivotal role in a business, arguably, if you're using it correctly and doing it for the right things, I think, which maybe where like people don't really understand that that's probably quite a big like thing for businesses to engage with you guys in a effective way. Because sometimes it's like the us versus them thing, right? Like depending on what kind of business you're in.
Sometimes you're sort of seen as a tech boffin in the back, and like, you know, they know the business, you know the tech. So like they come to you with a fully formed idea of how to solve the business problem. Yeah. But that's, you know, coming from their very limited view of the world sometimes. Like if you're from the product team, you're going to think of everything in terms of a product problem. But if you're, you know, if you're in the data team, you kind of see the whole business. So it's a little bit of a different perspective, I guess. And like what you're saying about IBM, it's actually, I tell a lot of sort of grads and I suppose more junior people that, you know, one of the best things I got out of that was because it was a consulting role. So consulting roles for me, as much as they are like an absolute grind, I think everyone knows that, you know, you're taught how to deal with stakeholders and sort of ask those extra questions and just have that sort of business engagement. So I think they're really sort of valuable roles if you can stand them. I think, sometimes they're not the best fit for people and the cultures can be a bit iffy, but I think there's a lot of value in those kinds of roles.
I think so too. I feel like someone else said that to me recently where they were like, the best thing they did as a someone starting out in data is actually gone into consulting and become more of a generalist, because it gives you a really good feeling for the rest of the like career. Even though it is, like you said, hard slog and like, God, we're like the ears on the ground as well when it comes to like feedback from that kind of environment. Sometimes it can work for people different types of people love it, but and thrive in that environment, but not for the faint-hearted. But
no, definitely not.
Well, I want to go more into that data science piece a little bit, because I know there's a lot of buzz around, like, I don't know, you know, auto ML, AI, like everything in that realm, which I don't know, it sounds like GSB is being really pragmatic about what's you know, the necessary approach to getting to that stage. But I suppose, Have you noticed anything yourself around that sort of like hype cycle terminology?
Yeah, I mean, everything now like is, you know, it has to have AI in the title so that you'll buy it, right? Yeah. So I mean, anything is pitched to me, it's like, oh, this is driven by AI, when really it's not. It's, you know, it's a marketing term a lot of the time, unfortunately. And especially now with like ChatGPT and things like that being as good as they are, and they are really good tools.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there's a lot of mysticism and, you know, magic behind it that I think it is a bit of hype, in my opinion. I know a lot of people are really sold on it, but I think they have their place, and like, but they're not panaceas. They don't solve everything. And I think, like you said, AutoML, actually, I think that was a really big thing maybe a few years ago now, where they were like, you know, you don't need data scientists anymore and AutoML will solve all your problems. And I think there's just it is an accelerator, but I think it's an accelerator for those people that are already in the roles. Like, as a data scientist, the modeling is it's the least tricky part of the job. It's the data prep that's hard. So if you're not prepping your data properly and giving it to AutoML, it's not going to do much better than a human. It might do it slightly faster, but you kind of still need that human in the loop kind of part of things. And it's the same with all this, the Gen AI stuff. We're using Databricks at GSB, and where, you know, it comes up with a suggestion of, if you're writing code, you know, it can auto suggest how to fix this code. Or if you have an error, like, you can say, pass it to the assistant and it'll fix it for you. And that's really helpful. But I know a lot of people say, you know, you'll never write code again because you'll just type it in English and take the code out and run it. But I've seen so many examples of that, just where it just doesn't work. And if you don't know how to code, you don't know how to fix it. So I still think you need the fundamentals and the people there, but it is definitely an accelerator. So I think it's just a take everything with a bit of a grain of salt and use it how it's meant to be used, and it's a great thing. But just over relying on it is where I think we're going to run into a bit of trouble.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that. Actually, I was speaking with a few different directors earlier this week at some of those big consultancies around the implementation of AI and auto sort of machine learning sort of developments, especially around note-taking and even dealing with proposals and sort of that being automated internally. That seems to be reducing a lot of their grad level roles as well. So they're sort of looking to implement that rather than having, you know, a human or a junior grad sort of taking those notes instead. Do you see that happening, I guess, as well at GSB, or are you trying to I guess, keep that human in the loop in the future? I know this is probably a bit ahead of time, but yeah, how does that
you guys? Yeah, I think I would like to see some of those things come in. I think especially for like the admin tasks of like, you know, summarize the meeting we just had. You know, you don't necessarily need a person to go and go through that manual effort if you've got a tool that can, you know, listen to a recording and take down the notes and stuff like that. I think that's for things like that that are still important but sort of busy work. I think that's where, you know, I'd like to see these things come in. I definitely don't want to see someone's whole job replaced like that, unless, I mean, unless their job was just taking notes, and then that's really unfortunate for that person. But hopefully that leads to them getting, you know, a job where they learn other skills. But yeah, I think it's a tricky one because, you know, in financial services and banking and stuff like that, everyone has to be so careful about what we do with data, and so does everyone. I mean, you know, just look at companies that have been in the news about data breaches and stuff. Like, it's a real reputational damage thing if you get it wrong. So you have to think really long and hard about, like, how do we bring this in and what does it do to our data and what's our, like, you know, risk vector and stuff like that. So I think there'll be a lot of long, hard conversations about it, but I think everyone's sort of keen. I think there's like a general buzz of like, we'd like to see this as an accelerator and how do we use this, but it's just the how and how do we do it safely.
Yeah, and how you position it as well. Like, we've seen a lot of people trying to, like you said earlier, like put AI in front of everything, like even job titles and like going to market with AI and all that stuff is like, oh, it's so frustrating because then when you get down to the nitty-gritty, like you're really going to do yourself a disservice if you're advertising AI and you're not going to have someone doing like, I don't know, building LLM models or whatever. It's actually just going to be like really the grunt work for what will be. And then you'll see a lot of people leave really quickly or have a really high attrition rate. There's just so many, like, I suppose, knock-on effects to that.
Go on. Oh, I was just going to say, there was a funny thing that happened a few years ago when I was back at AMP. They were running a, I think their superannuation system was an old sort of mainframe system. I think a lot of banks sort of have these old pieces of tech hanging around. So we got in consultants to sort of have a look at what's the options to sort of modernize the platform and, you know, bring it into the cloud or, you know, just so we're not reliant on this old like IBM tech, funnily enough. But I think the solution that these people, and I don't know who the consultancy was, I probably wouldn't name them anyway, but their solution was, oh, we would feed in the code or the data for the actual system itself into a model, and then the model would become the system. And that was their solution. And my boss was in the meeting where they pitched this, and he rang me and he said, this sounds terrible. Is it actually, or am I just missing the point? And I sort of said to him, I was like, these models are like statistical by nature. Like, there's a chance that something goes wrong every single time. And I couldn't imagine why they thought that was a good idea. I mean, the sell is, oh, you're running AI on the cloud, but it was just such a wrong solution. I think that's, you know, that's where this is all going to go wrong, is like people just buying things because it says AI or it says cloud or it says big data. Like, that's always been the thing, is, you know, if it's the modern tech, we have to have it, but you actually don't need it.
Yeah, it's the shiny things that everyone wants kind of thing.
Yeah. But
I heard actually someone before, again, said to me, someone who, well, I probably won't name the company in case I get in trouble, but there was a company that like had so-and-so AI, and it wasn't even the most fancy of tools or anything like really that was speaking to like what AI actually does. But because they had AI in the title, like it had so much, so many legs that everyone was like wanting to buy it. And it's now sold for $200 million, this company, to someone in the US. And it's just like mental. Like, these things have happened. Like you said, it's a marketing sort of tool for people to be able to, I don't know, not get rich quick, but, you know. For lack of better words sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's funny actually looking at the state of like even LinkedIn now and like the amount of posts that I'm just sort of seeing from everyone that's just like, I used AI to do this thing, and it's just like, well, you didn't do it, the AI did stuff. All that stuff's just, and it's really impressive stuff, like the AI and like ChatGPT, and especially now with the like retrieval augmented stuff, where the ChatGPT or the GPT models can go out and actually look at like knowledge bases of data. It allows them to do things like actually issue a citation for where they got the knowledge from, or like understand the context of a business when they answer a question, rather than just being trained on, you know, the internet and then trying to answer a question. Mm-hmm. That's a really good application of these things, because you can actually build in business context. And, you know, having the citations is such a game changer, because you can actually tell where the information is coming from, and then you can trust it a little more. But that's not what a lot of people are using. That's brand new. Like the ChatGPT stuff off the shelf is like, I was saying the other day to someone, like ChatGPT up till recently didn't know that the president wasn't Trump, because it was trained up till like 2020 data. So like if it doesn't know that, how can you trust it? And like that's just that's the easy one to sort of put in someone's face and say, you have to think about this a little deeper.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know why I thought of this, but it's kind of like if you meet someone in person and you have the same experience with them every single time, like a small talk perspective, it kind of feels like there's no depth to it. Like even people writing those posts, like, I don't know, you're just removing the person, you're removing like any substance.
Yeah.
It's good for like a starting point maybe, where people get a bit stuck and all that, but actually using it to like, I don't know, it's almost like plagiarize.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so much out there about that now, especially in like the, you know, generative image space and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know what's going to happen there. It'd be really interesting to sort of see how that sort of AI generated art sort of legalizes itself. But yeah,
I don't know. It's all very unknown. I think it's kind of bigger than everyone, this stuff, because of ChatGPT. But let's see how it unfolds, I suppose. And I think like you said the other day when we caught up, that like complex isn't necessarily always better. Like the basics are, I don't know, important. Like tell us more about, I suppose, that train of thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing of, you know, even like ChatGPT, like people like, you know, any ML problem we have now, the first question that like, you know, the stereotypical upper management person is, oh, I'll just throw ChatGPT at it. And it's like, no, just because it's a, you know, smart neural net model doesn't mean that it's trained to answer, you know, an attrition problem. Like it's a text generation thing. And it's also way overcomplicated. It's like trying to crack a walnut with a nuclear warhead or something. Like it's just like complete overkill. Especially it comes back to that conversation around like stakeholders and bringing this model into the business. We've got an example now where our credit risk team wants to get a single factor economic indicator is what they're calling it. So something that represents the economy. And to do that, you have to look at, you know, looking at all sorts of indicators about the economy and like modeling that towards a single figure. And you can do that in a lot of really complex ways and get a really good estimation of the economy. But at the end of the day, if you're going to use this to make any sort of business decision, whoever's making that decision has to understand what you're doing. So, and that they could be completely removed from, you know, data and modeling and even credit risk itself. Like if you can't explain how this is working, there's no way they're going to trust it. So it has to be explainable. And usually that means it has to be simpler. But that's not always the worst thing. I think sometimes you can trade off a bit of accuracy for a bit of understanding. And then you can always trial things that are a bit more complex and black box and maybe a little less obvious if the first one performs well and you can sort of iterate from there. But yeah, I think a lot of people's instinct is to go for the most complex, most, you know, newest tech first rather than going back to basics. And I think that's where a lot of people fall over themselves.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's probably a lack of understanding from audience as well, right? Like if you're wanting to impress someone who is a, I don't know, a PhD, like doctorate in XYZ modeling and like is really well renowned, you're going to build the most amazing model, right? But if they're like a CFO who wants to just know what the dollar is, then you got to think about that. So I agree.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the good examples we had was like trying to explain like a random forest model to the business, because we sort of realized that, you know, really basic linear regression, logistic regression stuff wasn't going to work for a use case that we had. So we wanted to do something a little more complex so that it actually, you know, gave them business value. But the next level up was from like a basic decision tree, which they would understand, which is a random forest where you have, you know, hundreds of these trees and they sort of learn a little bit and they all vote at the end of the day. And you have to kind of explain that to the business, kind of like I just did then. But, you know, we have to come up with an analogy that the random forest is like a trivia team The best trivia teams are the people you bring together with a little bit of subject knowledge in each area. And if you can come to an agreement at the end of the day, usually you do the best. And I think that was just being able to explain it in really simple terms, just actually helped them get it over the line. Whereas if we sort of said, you know, oh, you know, we use 200 trees and it's got a depth of this and we use this kind of training algorithm, you know, it would have completely gone over their heads. Like there's, that's just where like that doesn't fly. You have to do something that's actually going to meet your audience. So it just shows the value of like, I don't know, actually having that business acumen a little bit.
Yeah, they would have been like, okay, cool, where are the trees planted? Like,
exactly, yeah. Are they in the cloud? How does that
work? Oh, that's so good. Well, I feel like we've had some really good nuggets of info for a lot of people from different levels, I think, in this particular conversation. I suppose to sort of round it out with where you're at now at GSB, maybe to do somewhat of a shameless plug for you and your team, and I suppose where you guys are at on your journey, and what if someone was looking at or even listening to this podcast and they wanted to join you guys, what would they be in for to a degree?
Yeah, sure. Look, one of the best things about Great Sound & Bank, before we even get into what we're doing, is I mean, I've worked at a lot of places where there's a lot of tension between shareholders and you know, what you're actually trying to do in the business. So sometimes you're trying to do good things for the customers and that costs money and that doesn't fly with the shareholders. But because Great Southern Bank is customer owned, you don't actually have that tension, which actually feels really good at the end of the day. Like, you know, that customer initiatives, as long as we have the capital for it or we can, you know, work out the expenditure for it, we can actually try and do those things. So I think that's a really refreshing change of pace for me. And I think a lot of people in financial services or who've worked for the big banks before, I think it'll be a refreshing change of pace for you too, Wink. But I think what we're doing is really exciting as well. And, you know, one of the massive draws for me was, you know, getting to build this new cloud platform from the ground up. I think a lot of places where you go, you sort of have to deal with the tech debt that you've been dealt. And a lot of places that is quite substantial and quite difficult. And, you know, the first three steps of your day are overcoming someone else's problems from 10 years ago, and then you can finally do your job. Whereas now we get to do this from scratch, and, you know, we get to everything we've all learned over the however many combined decades of experience we all have, we can put that in and say, nope, let's not do it that way because, you know, I tripped over it at this company or they tripped over it there. And I think we're getting a lot of that now. It's a really collaborative environment and everyone's, you know, really good about speaking up and saying, I don't think this is going to work for, you know, the analysts in the future or the customers in the future or things like that. But yeah, it's a really modern data platform. We're using Databricks on AWS. It's been really great to just experience the new platforms and see how they all work. Like I was using Redshift on AWS and that was great a while ago, but Databricks is a really good game changer in that space as well. It's got the ML stuff built into it as well as the database. So it's really exciting for me. And yeah, it's just a great team of people. So if you see any open roles, that'd be great for you to apply. It's a really good place to work.
What about last question about you and your leadership? Like, what are they going to expect walking into like your leadership style?
Oh, good question. I'm the kind of person who's like constantly in a t-shirt in the office, so don't worry about dressing up for me. It doesn't bother me, and it doesn't bother anyone at the company as well, which I really appreciate. I worked for BMW Financial Services quite a while ago, for not a very long time. But they were in the summer, like had to be like suit and tie. I think if it got over like 35 degrees, you didn't have to wear the suit jacket. Oh, wow. But it was just like, it was so old school and formal and stuff like that. But yeah, very much better here. The CEO, who's a great guy, Paul Lewis, often see him walking around and he does have a business shirt on, but his sleeves are always rolled up because he's ready to do the work. I'm 10 years out of uni, so I know what it's like to be a grad. I feel like I'm not that far out, even though I probably am. So I know what it's like to be like a junior in the team, and I think I know where it's valuable to learn skills and like have the breadth or then go into the depth. And I think I've done a little bit of everything to know if I see a person with that kind of skill, I might know where to point them. And that's a really big part for me, is just like developing people. I think I'm really passionate about learning, and if, you know, other people are as well, then I'm more than happy for them to take time out to do that or help them to do that. So that's a really big driver for me. So I think I'm all about learning and getting skills, if that's what you're into.
Love that. I feel like you just like effortlessly did a really good pitch for yourself and for the business. So
yeah,
I can tell it comes from a good place and genuine place as well. Well, I suppose to wrap it all up, like if you're someone on the market looking for a role or want to look at GSB as a company, definitely introduce yourself to Adam and obviously the team there. Sounds like you're on a big growth journey as well, pending some of the stuff that you're getting done from the foundational side. So that's really awesome. And then I suppose we'll move on to the next episode when we see you guys next time. But thanks, Adam. That was awesome.
No, thank you guys.
So something really important for us here at Precision Sourcing is mental health. It's something we've been focused on a lot over the last year or so. And we're lucky enough to have partnered with the Black Dog Institute. And we're going to be doing a lot of events with them this year. A lot of our events, money will be going towards them. And they're out there aiming to create a mentally healthier world for everyone. So if you wish to support the cause, please donate via the link in the bio on this podcast. And you'll be seeing a lot more information about Black Dog over the next year.